Hey, Sox fans, welcome back to Hot Takes and Heaters. He's Danny Miller. I'm Nick Morawski. We are the MLB-centric Chicago White Sox podcast for the future Sox world. If you are finding this audio after Tuesday night's ball game, I apologize, but we've got it on live right now. Danny and I are both watching it in the background, as others maybe if you're joining us on the feed on YouTube or on Twitch. It's a tight one here. Kopech is in the game. It's 5-4 Sox, looking to get their fourth win of the season. It's the bottom of the eighth. So as we chop things up, we might be talking a little bit about this game and how it goes with the cardiac kid on the mound. Danny, as always, great talking with you, buddy.
Yeah, and as always, it's good to be here. Good to be with you on a Tuesday night yet again. Good to be heard. Good to be seen. And like you said, just hoping the White Sox can pull out a white-knuckle win here on another Tuesday night.
Eric Fetty started the game here for the Sox, and he had a great line. I think it was six innings, 11 strikeouts, if that's right, which is a career best for him. His stuff was moving all over the place, that cutter and, mixing it up, in terms of the zone, and, got away with some stuff as he got above the belt. But I like what I saw.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the command was pretty impeccable today. And Fetty figured out early in the game that the strike zone was going to be just a notch high. And he threaded that needle over and over and over again, where he was right at the top of the zone and he was getting that strike called all night long. Moved the ball up and down really well, in and out really well. Had the Twins hitters just guessing on a lot of stuff over there. Movement.
That's difficult to do. That's tough to do, right, Danny? You might come into the game with an idea of where the strike zone is, and then it fluctuates on you. We've seen that quite a bit this year already. And I feel like lately, over the last few years with umpires, and you've got to then change up your approach a little bit. And you've got to, instead of digging your heels in maybe and being stubborn and, no, that's a strike, I'm going to just keep pitching to that because eventually they might call it. If you could quickly adapt, which is very difficult to do, because that might be the umpire strike zone. That's where it's going to be. And now I have to adjust. So that's a good point by you. Not only are you trying to work your way through a major league roster, a lineup, I should say, first time he's seen the Twins, and now a strike zone that maybe you did not anticipate.
Yeah. And like I said, he figured it out rather quickly. I believe it was right in the top of the first. He kind of snuck one in just above the zone, got the call right off the bat. It was a confident call by the home plate umpire. And he went right back to that pitch in the very next pitch and put it pretty much in almost the same exact place, got the call again. And I think right then and there, he knew where the established strike zone was going to be. And he took full advantage of it, and he used it. And like I said, the shape of his pitches it was fantastic tonight. He was moving the ball in and out of the zone, up and down on the zone, and he had those guys just absolutely fooled. They were just guessing. Some really bad swings, couple of swords out there. Just overall impressive win. He hasn't gotten the win yet, but overall impressive outing for Fetty tonight.
Yeah, I think in maybe his seventh, is this his seventh season, MLB season? It's the first time he's faced the Twins. So perhaps that old magic of, when the White Sox wouldn't see a pitcher before and that pitcher looked like Cy Young against us, maybe there was something going on in that realm with Twins hitters, which Twins are scuffling as well. Twins, this is the first time they're seeing Fetty, and they couldn't figure it out.
It's very possible that it's one of those situations. You kind of hope that, Eric Fetty's been pretty solid most of the season. So, it might be that he's going to continue to have this kind of success no matter what kind of lineup he faces. And the White Sox do have some difficult ones on the schedule, as we move through the season. But, to be honest with you, he's just been a bright spot all year. There's been times where maybe his stuff wasn't exactly perfect, but he still seems to get himself out of situations rather well. And I'm here for it, man. I mean, you know, he came over and we talked about it in the off season. This was a guy to keep an eye on because he had learned some new pitches. He had found some help with his command, and he pitched it's still pro ball overseas where he was at. And it's, you know, the KBO is known for being an offensive league. You know, our guys kind of just tee off on some of the pitching over there, and he dominated last season. So, you know, let's hope that he can remain as dominant as he was tonight throughout the season.
That was a 2-year deal, right? You know, when he got paid this offseason, I mean, he factors into next year, I believe.
I believe he does. I believe it's 2 years. And if I'm not mistaken, there might even be an option for a third club option. I don't have that in front of me, but I know he's here for at least two.
So, you know, I don't want to say this is a get your feet wet, get reacclimated with the major leagues, you know, test out some of the stuff you learned. I don't think that's his mentality. I think he's got a chip on his shoulder. He wants to prove the White Sox right and everybody else that passed on him wrong. But, you know, you kind of get your sea legs a little bit maybe, and then maybe you try to make hay. I don't want to look too far ahead, but let's be honest, folks. Like, that's what we're doing right now with a 3-win, maybe 4-win team. We're looking into the future, if not this season, but next. And, you know, that's a guy to track this year if he's going to play into next year's rotation.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we went into this season with question marks up and down the pitching staff, right? Next season, there's going to be some question marks. It's one of those things that we've talked about in the past. I think everybody and their brother is pretty much talking about how the White Sox are not a team that they're going to spend a fortune on starting pitching, right? And you're going to kind of hope that you're going to get some things out of some of these guys that are here right now that are on some, you know, friendlier deals, trying to make their way, and hope that they can, you know, continue to be part of that rotation next season. The one thing I do want to backtrack on, though, is there's a lot of really promising young arms in the White Sox organization right now.
Yeah. I want to touch on a little bit of that as we kind of, you know, go throughout this episode, especially Nastrini. So don't let me forget about that. I want to get your thoughts on
situation. We'll touch on a few of those things, but it's kind of difficult to get deep into it because we do have a live White Sox game.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Maldonado just did what Maldonado does. And by the way, how about that, man?
Team hero comment.
Earlier in the game, maybe two innings ago, you know, the Twins were able to tack on another run because the effort from Maldonado behind the plate, what a piss poor effort. I don't know if he got crossed up or if he didn't realize that was the pitch that was coming, but boy, he tried to backhand a ball in the dirt, which is like a cardinal sin, bounced off his shin guard, I believe, allowed the Twins runner to get in scoring position, and the Twins just had a base knock and they scored a run. You know, again, like everybody hyping, well, maybe he's going to, you know, he's not going to bring the bat with him this year, but, you know, we got a guy that could play defense. I haven't seen anything from Maldonado that, he's a veteran, so I guess it's like you don't want to do him wrong and just DFA him. I don't know if I even subscribe to that, but the less of him, the better, Danny.
Yeah, you know, I've seen a lot of social media posts saying that maybe Maldonado, you know, if the White Sox really want to keep him around for this young pitching staff and the way he handles these pitchers and the confidence that he gives them when they're on the mound, by all means, make him a coach of some sort.
Baseball coach.
Put him in a Jim Tomey type role.
It's an advisory role. A consultant, perhaps. A catching consultant.
You know, right, exactly. Yeah. Keep him around if you want guys to be able to pick his brain and help develop the rest of the young catching staff as well. You know, guys like Corey Lee and Caro and, you know, Charlie, who any of those guys that are going to make their way up, you know, fine. But I'm tired of seeing them. You cannot bat, you know, whatever. And be
I mean, his, in the, and, across and the line. The slash line is just brutal.
I mean, his OPS is like 200.
Yeah. Yeah, we've spent far too much time talking about him already. Guy up at the plate right now, Danny, is Mendick. I mean, this is Mr. TWTW. This is Mr. Gamer. I mean, this guy was on fire in Charlotte, 5 straight games with a home run. They brought him up on Monday. He's done nothing but hit and hustle, and he can play multiple positions. I mean, is this going to be your all-star, your mandatory all-star selection?
I mean, it's only one game, but right now it's looking that way, isn't it? You know, somebody has to represent the White Sox.
Oh my goodness.
Come the break. Yeah. And you know, if Danny Mendick does half of what he's doing right now for the remainder of the time between now and the middle of July, there's a good chance he is that guy.
I know people were laughing like, oh, that's the one thing we get excited about is bringing Danny Mendick up. Like, but look at where we're at. I mean, you have to take any small amount of positivity and five games in a row with a home run. Hey, that's positive in my book. And if he can spark this team anywhere near drawing a couple wins here and there, I don't know, boosting somebody, kicking somebody in the butt verbally and just saying, hey, get it together, you know, and maybe lead by example. I don't know if it's going to matter or anything, but it's just fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I can't imagine that the entire lineup is going to bat at or under 200. For the remainder of the season, right? Like, some of these guys are going to have to come alive. Again, though, you know, we talked about it all offseason. We knew the offense was going to be bad. Some of these guys were brought in specifically for their gloves, and we'll get into more of that later because that hasn't been exactly awesome either. But I can't imagine that there's going to be an entire lineup of guys that are hitting below the Mendoza line like they are,
you know, right now, at least mostly. Yeah. All the quotes that you read, whether it's from Marcus Timms or Grifol, which I've got a couple earmarked, of course, that I always do that I'd love to read off. But it's always, you know, we got to move ahead. We got to move ahead. You know, we're going to get out of this. This isn't how it's going to be. This isn't us, and all the political correct stuff. But again, I'm with you, Danny. I just don't think it can happen at all. I mean, we're not even out of the month of April. Like, this kind of stuff can't be this bad for, you know, even 2 to 3 months. You know, I think it'll spike up, and it might go back down. I have no answers when people ask me, what's going on with Vaughn? What's going on with Benintendi? You know, what's going on with some of these guys that were supposed to bring this, the play the game right, and you know, the defense and everything? I don't have answers. Either they got the wrong guys, whatever they're doing that's, you know, optional, all their optional work, maybe it needs to be more mandatory. Maybe there isn't accountability. I feel like that's true. There is no accountability.
Yeah, there's you know, I mean, that's been something that's been said, you know, since Pedro's kind of moved in and taken over. And, you know, he said all the right things in the media last year coming in. You know, we're going to battle. We're going to plan and be ready to, you know, kick your ass every night. You know, type of, you know, quotes from Pedro.
Right.
And well, here's yet to see any of what he's.
I mean,
this was
Grifol yesterday.
Steven Wilson, huh?
Steven Wilson's going to try to close this one. I believe that was part of the Cease acquisition from the Padres. But
indeed,
Grifol said, you know, I can tell you this. Rest assured that everything that happens in this ball club, on the field, off the field, that affects us being able to win a baseball game or affects the integrity and character of this organization is being addressed. You got to take him at his word, of course. And I don't know if his character, I don't know if I'm confident taking him at his word based on what I've experienced the last year and a half or so.
No, he was asked a question post game the other day about pulling Maldonado out for a pinch hitter.
Yep.
And he fired back, you know, what part of the game are we talking about? I don't remember who it was that asked the question, but the reporter told him when it was. And he said, no, I'm leaving my catcher in the game. We had a lead then.
Because he puts the right fingers down. That was his justification for that.
Yeah. So, like, you know what? I don't want to hear that crap. That's a Tony La Russa.
This game just has been tied up. Guess who? Byron Buxton off of Steven Wilson in the bottom of the ninth. How about that?
Yeah. Well, before we came on, you and I were having a little bit of a conversation.
We were.
And I thought it was odd that Jordan Leisure came in when he did or was pulled when he was. I feel like he looked pretty good in the inning.
He did look good.
Probably could have stayed in for the eighth to set up for Michael. And hopefully Michael gets it done. I don't really know what Pedro's thoughts are on this. You know, you brought up the fact that Michael hasn't pitched in a little bit.
Been a while since you've seen him.
Yeah. I said, you know what? Bring him in the ninth regardless, whether you have a lead or not. But coming in the eighth after Jordan Leisure, you know, had a decent inning the inning before, didn't really make me feel good about the situation. And now we got Steven Wilson and giving up dingers.
Nobody out here. Twins and Sox aren't very good in extra innings baseball. So you know, we'll be on this episode, I'm assuming, for the rest of this one, unless there's some crazy situation where it goes into 14, 15 innings. I don't know. Maybe we'll just still stick around. We'll do a marathon episode, Danny, to see the
You know what? I'm here for it, man. I got nothing going on tomorrow. I'm still recovering from knee surgery.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is going well. Good. I am moving pretty well. I have tickets for the Whiskey Q crawl on Saturday.
That's the hockey jersey.
You might, you might see me crawling, but I'm going to be there. It will be at the White Sox game on Saturday.
Pat Hester is going to be there. Pat Hester will be there representing Good Guys Talk Back. He's making his first appearance at the stadium this year. So he will be there as well. As I'm sure there'll be
reach out and meet up with him sometime.
Yeah, there'll be a few other thousand people crushing milkshakes, wearing hockey jerseys, post whiskey crawl. Who knows? You know, I'm sure there might be some, you know, opportunities to drop something in one of those milkshakes, make it a boozy milkshake out there during that crawl. They might get a little weird and wild.
Yeah. I don't know about all that, man. You know, that might be for some folks, but not for me.
Danny, there will be folks. If that's an opportunity, there will be folks trying to figure that out.
I'm sorry. I'm so tired of this damn milkshake.
It's got its own commercial, as Trey reminded us. It's got its own commercial now. I mean, it's
grown its own entity and identity, and it is enough, man. Like that's the biggest selling point they have for this season right now, and it's absolutely atrocious. It's shameful. But I digress. I'll be there either way. I am going to get my White Sox baby blue or powder blue, you know, Royals away jersey, alternate jersey.
That I believe is that logo, sweater. that color coordination could be from the 1968 team, late 60s. I think they had the powder blue
I find it funny that they bring that look back now.
Oh, after all the whole Royals stuff. Yeah. No, I get you.
Seems appropriate, I guess.
Bad optics, perhaps. Yeah. in this game, earlier in the game, really to get the Sox going, Eloy Jimenez with a three-run jack. He also had a single and I think a shard of a bat, his bat, got into his
eye.
My
heart stopped.
Yeah, as he was running to first base after he roped that single, you know, holding his eyes. I mean, it's like, I don't know if you can pull some sort of optical, if you can pull an eye nerve while running. So it was, I think, just a shard from the bat. But, you know, I don't know. I have zero expectations for Eloy Jimenez. It's great that he's back. I think it's going to take him some time to get into groove, if he can get into a groove. But I am no longer on the, you know, oh, if he can stay healthy, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. I'm more of a, he's here, he's in the lineup, I hope he can contribute. You know, I'm not holding my breath, and I have no expectations.
No, you know what? I mean, he's got a couple of dingers in the last couple of days. Maybe your 20 prediction is still alive.
You think so?
He doesn't. Well, he doesn't look like he's moving all that well. I'll say that for, you know, that much. We saw him hit one the other day that could have probably gone for a double and didn't. He was kind of very slow to first and just kind of easy around the bag. And then it was either the next batter or two batters later. We saw him go first to third, but he wasn't moving very hard, very fast. He just doesn't look like he's still 100%.
Danny, then, let me ask you
tonight to see that shard of bat go into his eyeball while he cries on first base. It was just just gives you pause. I'm like, how is this guy? Not only is he not healthy ever, but now he's going to be unlucky with getting pieces of wood in his eyeball.
Yeah, he's going to have to wear goggles, protective goggles, Chris Sabo goggles.
Rec specs.
There's a comment in the chat here about Vaughn and, you know, a comparison maybe to Josh Donaldson, or there were a lot of comparisons, you know, with Vaughn going as high as he did in the draft. Everybody's talking about Vaughn. What's wrong with this guy? You know, is he broke? Do you have thoughts? You come from, you know, a farm system background, a minor league. Would it do him well to go down to AAA? Is that going to solve things for him?
You know what? They said it in the broadcast earlier today, and I have noticed kind of a lot of the same. He does seem to be squaring up balls here as of late. He's getting good wood, and I might give him – wow, that's fair.
I can't believe that just happened. I'm sorry to interrupt, Danny, but like this little pop fly that I got to see this again if Andrew Benintendi was going full bore at it, but it kind of like just fell right at his feet, almost thinking it was going to be foul.
Was he playing on the warning track is my question. Like, where did he come from?
I'm watching the replay right now. And again, if you're catching the audio later, you've seen this already. That was a loaf. That was an absolute loaf to get into that ball. Look how deep
he's playing.
That was not a sprint in. So now you got runners at third and second. One out for the Twins. This just screams walk off right here for the Twins.
What was that defensive alignment? You got a man on second, and
he was hanging out in the first row of the bleachers out there.
He was like 5 feet off of the warning track.
Who's responsible? Daryl Boston used to be responsible for the outfielders. Is Jason Bourgeois, was he available? Was he in the dugout, able to communicate with outfielders?
He was taking a deuce timeout, maybe. I don't know. But, man, you got a man on second, and it is the bottom of the ninth in a tie ball game. The last thing you want to do is get walked off. So why are you playing so deep? If you're going to beat me over my head, you're going to beat me over my
Correct.
Head.
Correct.
But you're not going to beat me with a ball in front of me where you're going to score from second all the way. And that was just dumb. It's luckily for them that ball was hit so high that the man on second could not
take hold up on that. And I don't think, I don't think that was a deke by Benintendi. That was just a simple trot in. He trotted in for that.
Yeah. You know what?
Again, if you're ever going to fire up two at a time, Danny, maybe even a cigarette and a cigar at the same time.
I'm getting real close because I just fired up that cigar. Trying not to do the long darts too often here because this team is going to really get me this year.
I get you. I'm just having some fun with you.
Yeah. I'm right there. I'm pretty close because that play just about did it for me. I'm like crawling out of my skin over here. I don't know if you guys.
It's a big strikeout by Steven Wilson. So now we got two outs, bottom of the ninth. Twinkies and third and second, not out of the woods at all. It just feels like it in these situations, Danny, with how this team has been this year. You know, whatever can go wrong will go wrong. They haven't been doing very well for themselves either. It's not like these are a lot of hard luck losses or, boy, we played really, really tough and we just got beat. I mean, they've been embarrassing losses, but when you're going that way, when you have a tight game like this, you know, it just feels like it's going to go the other way. It's not going to go the White Sox way. And that effort right there by Benintendi, man, that spoke volumes.
Yeah. And again, another guy that was brought in, you know, because he was supposed to be a decent defender. And we were hoping we were going to get the version of him from a few years ago where he actually hit, you know, 20 bombs or so, 18 bombs, whatever it was. And we've seen neither. We've seen neither from him. Matter of fact, we've seen a lackluster effort from the guy with the highest paycheck in White Sox history. And I believe, was it you that I saw on Twitter kind of posted or reiterated what somebody else has said, that some of these guys that got their paychecks seem to just be mailing it in. They're too comfortable.
Yeah,
they got paid, you know, and they don't care.
I wasn't necessarily talking about Benintendi, but I guess it could apply. And again, I hate to question, you know, how much heart and how much love and how much passion and all this other stuff, but it just feels like some of the guys on this team that got paid big time early, like they got mega contracts, mega, before they even did much. And even goes back to Tim Anderson, you know, he got paid handsomely before he really even put any time in at the major league level. But you look at guys like Aloy,
to get paid again too.
Yeah, Aloy, we'll get into that. Mancata. I mean, you can look at you know, Yaz and Benintendi, sure, and you know the amount of money that they made. I don't know. I know Benintendi was dealing with the hand issue still last year, and he claims like it's all right. He's healthy, ready to go. I don't know what his excuse is this year, but I have no like factual stuff to back up. It's just kind of a hypothesis. If it's interesting to see some guys that they just, man, they got huge contracts. Sox doing their Sox thing, trying to lock up young guys for a long period of time. And it just feels like, well, hey, I got paid, you know, I don't have to go earn that. I already got it.
We're not ignoring the chat. We kind of have an agenda that we're on here. And right now it's about this White Sox game.
That's a walk-off. And that is a walk-off for the Twins. Stephen Wilson, I believe, with the home plate ump about something, but
answer. This is my answer to the people that say, why get rid of Pedro Grifol right now? Why? Everybody wants to say why White Sox don't want to pay a new manager, and you know, what difference does it make?
You're shifting Charlie Montoya into manager, and maybe you'll put Grady Sizemore, who's just a baseball coach, quote unquote, in the yearbook, put him at bench coach. You know,
That's the thing. We're talking about a team everybody wants to say, well, it's 2024. They're not going anywhere. They're not doing anything. But we're going to see a parade of guys come up from the minor leagues this year, probably more than ever, is my guess. We're going to see a bunch of young pitching. We're going to see a handful of prospects, and then that's before rosters expand at the end of the year, you know, like we normally would see. And I don't want this guy's taint on these young guys.
That's a great point. Here. Yeah. That's the thing that I think is the layer that we're not maybe noticing immediately. It's a lot of excuses I've seen from people, and to each their own. This is their thought process. Hey, fan how you want a fan.
I knew somebody was gonna say something about taint in the chat.
Ian,
not what I meant, but as soon as I said it, I was like, oh shit, here it comes.
From the man who said 74, he's now talking about taint. So you know, you got people saying, as Sox fans, well, look, like it's not gonna do anything realistically. Look at how horrible this lineup is. Nobody in the world could ever manage a team like this and get them going in the right direction. Pedro can't create miracles, this, that, and the other. You might feel good for a little while that Pedro's gone, but at the end of the day, what is it really? I just can't wrap my brain around that mentality. I mean, that to me is just a lazy loser mentality. You don't know. You know, if you look at a guy like Pedro Grifol and you say, again, I've said this before multiple times, but I guess it's a good moment to bring it up again because of this loss and where the Sox are headed. If you look at him and you say he hasn't been able to do anything that he claimed he was going to do, he doesn't get anything out of his team, you're not going to get rid of all the players. Okay, we talk about them in the NFL.
We know who he is.
We know who he is. And if he has faith in his managerial abilities, it's like, buddy, what is your managerial resume? Okay, it's only with the Sox, and it's been god-awful. So how could you lean on what you've done as a manager? You haven't done anything. And I think the Sox would help him save face and say, guy, if you want to manage again in Major League Baseball or hold some other position, we're going to put you out of your misery. We are going to let you go. You can resign, or we're going to take you out of this because it is getting bad. You go away for a little bit. you gather yourself and maybe you come back. I don't know. Maybe the Kansas City Royals pick him back up and something in baseball, you know, because they seem to have a rich history with him. But, you know, it's to say that nothing will change. Look at yourself, Danny, and or anybody, you know, anytime you want to make a change, whether it's a professional change, you're looking to get a new job or something you want to do personally for yourself, lose a couple pounds, eat better, exercise more, whatever it is, save some more money. And you look at the broad picture, the big picture, and you're like, oh, wow. It's so daunting. Why even do anything? Why even try to do anything? Nothing's going to change. You know, I've dug myself in such a hole. One little decision isn't going to make it. It's a bunch of little decisions.
It happens all the time.
You know, if you can make one positive step, I think a positive step, and get rid of Grifol, maybe that could be slowly a domino effect in some other situations. You know, it's one of a lot of other moves that are going to have to be made if you want to get the right people in place, like you had said, when this movement comes up along the lines. I don't think those people are there right now.
No, that's the thing. We've talked about it in the past with, I mean, this is like Tony La Russa 2.0. I didn't want him putting his stink all over some of the guys that were coming up during his regime. You know, we talk about a clubhouse that, I mean, I don't know if you caught that Foul Territory episode
with AJ
last week here with AJ and Chuck. I know there was a certain part of it that a lot of people talked about, but that whole episode was actually really good. And, you know, they talked about how the clubhouse, it was like Chuck says, there's no mistaking that clubhouse was fractured, was the words that he actually used. And even though the White Sox aren't doing anything good on the field, he says that that's maybe the one thing that he's focused on is putting his clubhouse back together. And that's fine. If that's really what's happening behind the scenes, and that's the one thing they're fixing for the future.
Who's trying to fix the clubhouse? Who's trying to put it together?
Grifol? Well, he says Pedro is trying to do that.
But guys are on 1-year deals. Like,
they're right, not that's my point. Next year. If you're bringing up these guys that are going to be coming up, and they're going to come, I mean, we've already seen a handful of young pitchers come up. And they're going to, you know, subsequently go back down, and no worries, folks. Those guys will make their way back up. It's just with how the White Sox operate. They're going to give all these veterans their opportunities. You know, we're going to have Clevinger coming up here shortly. We're going to have Keller making his way up. Davis Martin, once he's done with his IL stint, gets a couple rehab. They're going to give these guys their opportunities. It's just how they do things. So
let me ask you about
these guys are coming, and I don't want the stink of Pedro's dumb ass. Just like we got the stink of Tony La Russa's dumb ass and some of these guys, and he created a fractured clubhouse.
How are we going to fix
a fractured clubhouse if all these guys, half these guys aren't going to be here next year?
If you don't think Pedro's the guy moving forward that you're going to build a Keller team with, stuff, and, way, and, right. you know, and go beyond, and you might not know who the next manager is necessarily long term, but you got Montoya right there as your bench coach, like Renteria was there for Robin Ventura towards the end of his tenure. And you just knew when Renteria was hired as bench coach, you knew the leash that Robin Ventura had. So, I'm not saying Montoya is just going to all of a sudden be the long-term manager, but if you don't think Grifol is your guy, then just get him out of the way. Just, you know what, cut bait. It's like, we don't know what the future is, but we'll put Montoya in right now. This is kind of a lost year, but we know one thing. Whatever Grifol was trying to do, said he was going to do, he has not been able to capture that. He hasn't been able to implement it for some weird reason. Of course, guys are getting hurt. Guys aren't, you know, performing. But what are you going to say to me? Oh, well, Grifol can only manage with an all-star lineup and guys that never get hurt. And then he might have a shot at really managing.
Well, hell, you could manage a major league ball town club with a stellar, you know, healthy lineup every night. I mean, that's no challenge. But, you know,
I said this to you and Ian when we were texting a couple days ago leading up to this episode. It's very difficult to be serious at all about this organization, about what's going on, for a lot of reasons. But the core reason for me is that Pedro Grifol is still employed as a manager for the White Sox.
Well, yeah, and I mean, in your last little rant there, you brought up the fact that, you know, being prepared, and that's something that he throws around a lot. He likes to say, you know, we're going to be prepared. We're going to be prepared. We're going to be what all we do is prepare. All we do is prepare. I sure shit don't see it. Pardon my French. I know I'm cussing more than I normally do on the show. I like to keep it, you know, a family show. So you and your kids.
Danny, the Sox are 3-20. You've got privilege to maybe loosen up the language a little bit here and there.
They don't look prepared.
It's in-game decisions. It's, you know, going back to that Maldonado thing, you know, with you're keeping him in for what? Because he puts the right fingers down? Because he is some sort of, you know, wall behind home plate? He's not. He proved it again here in this Minnesota game on Tuesday night. He's just a joke, you know. And well, so again, what is he going
to
say?
Give the veterans their opportunities.
What is Grifol going to really say? I hear that from a lot of people. What can he really say? And I don't know what he can say at this point. That's what I'm saying. He is doomed. Like, get him out of there. Like, take the hook from Vaudeville. Take the big hook. Hook him off the stage. Just say, sorry, bud. We got to protect you, man, because they're going to eat you alive.
Well, a lot of people say, well, there's no point if they, you know, it doesn't matter if they keep him. But, you know, so what's the point of firing him? Well, that is my point of firing him. It's, you know what, you got guys, this guy is not a major leaguer. You want to give your veterans all the time in the world to, you know, you're going to give them every opportunity to figure it out. Martin Maldonado hasn't been all-star Martin Maldonado in 4 years before this season. So how many opportunities do we need to see that regression is not his friend anymore? He is in full on regression. It happens. There comes a time in your career when you got to say, you know what? It's time for me to hang it up. And if you're not willing to do that, you're going to have to be forced into that position.
Yeah, I'd like to see
Pedro Grifol as a manager and Chris Getz as a general manager need to know when to pull the plug.
Yeah, it's on Getz too. It goes all the way up to the top. The man who is going to, you know, open up his wallet and maybe throw $200 million to get this Southside Stadium. You know, I'm willing to open up the wallet to help out here, help the cause. Goes all the way up to him. We know that, you know, it gets tiresome talking about it. But things that can be controlled and changed, you know, Jerry's not going anywhere. He's not going to sell. He thinks he's going to live another 10 years. Who knows if his kids hold on to it, what they're going to do. I don't know, but you can get rid of Grifol. You know, I don't think Getz is leaving anytime soon unless he resigns and just says, whoops-a-daisy. Yeah, I wasn't ready for this. I got the blessing from Jerry, but I have future. I want to have a future in baseball, and this is not a good start for me unless he believes, well, once you're in the White Sox family, as a lot of people have found out, you're a lifer. Right, it's very difficult to get kicked out, as we saw with Kenny Williams, Daryl Boston, even Han, well past his due. So, you know, the performance is horrible, but some of these in-game decisions, just like how the bullpen was managed, these little things, if you've been watching the games, which is tough to do, I get it, but you're watching the games and you're seeing how they're losing some of these. There isn't any change from the manager. Like, no lessons are being learned.
Yeah, it's unfortunate to feel like this same broken record just keeps spinning, and that every time I feel like something might change, as much as things change, it all stays the same. And you know, it's just the White Sox way. And it just doesn't happen. And as far as this whole freaking stadium thing, and I see the chat's kind of picking up on that. $1.7 billion they're asking for in public funding before Jerry said he was going to open his wallet. And what did you say that number was reported that he was ready to put in?
$200 million he was interested in.
So that still puts it at like 1.5, right?
Yeah.
That they're asking for from the state.
Yeah.
Which still makes it the most expensive state-funded-esque in pro sports history in the U.S. The largest ask to be publicly funded in pro sports history. And you want to do it for this team? For this team that you don't even want to invest a $150, $200 million in a year to put a product on the field?
Yeah, yeah. Build a team, and then we'll worry about a stadium.
I don't want to give them out. You know, Sylvie, Waddle and Sylvie this afternoon, I just happened to be in the car, and, you know, I flipped on the station, and there was Waddle and Sylvie. And I don't really listen to a lot of sports radio in the afternoon anymore like I used to. Those guys are halfway decent. They were talking about this. And it was Tom Waddle who said, you know what, you guys, fans, as fans, need to write your congressmen and your lawmakers in Illinois and say, we're not doing it, because the general consensus is they're probably going to get this thing done. They're probably going to get some way to, they're going to figure out a way to show the economic impact on the area to get funding.
Well, you could
right now.
You could massage anything to maybe look like something, but we've had enough economists and enough videos and enough blurbs out there recently that explains pretty clearly that there's no backing, there's no proof of a publicly funded stadium invigorating, you know, an economic growth in certain areas. It's schools, right. It's libraries, it's parks. That's where your public money is best being used. A pro sports stadium, there's no proof for that it's good for, you know, a local economy.
No, and you know what? To be honest with you, I don't have an issue with the stadium that they have now. Is it, you know, a throwback stadium like every stadium that's been built since there? Since New Comiskey Park was built back and it opened in 1991? It was that concrete bowl cookie cutter, but you know, the renovations, which by the way, they haven't had to pay for either. That's all those renovations. I think they have like $36 million mm-hmm. a year that rolled over year after year. So the years they didn't do any renovations, that money rolled over so that, you know, it kind of went into an escrow account.
Look, if you've so traveled every time they did around, a
major renovation, the state paid for that too.
If you've seen other stadiums, yeah, there are some beautiful stadiums with wonderful skylines and bridges and, you know, quaint little, you know, kind of Anytown USA vibe that these cities, you know, this village that exists around ballparks now, right? That's how it is. Restaurants, bars, hotels, you know, outdoor concert venues, lots of greenery, all that kind of thing.
Sure, all that would be fun and exciting.
Exactly. But in terms of actual stadiums, I got to tell you, if you're going to be open-minded, and I know I'm extremely skewed as a diehard Sox fan, but it has its issues. It's horribly run. The stadium is horribly run. How they deal with, you know, the logistics, just even from getting people into the ballpark to operational stuff, you know, parking, all that kind of stuff. It's just horribly run. But the actual stadium's not bad. Not bad compared to a lot of other ballparks that I've been to that have been built more recently that are just dumps. You know, I don't know who designed them. You know, they threw some colorful paint. You know, it's new. It doesn't do much for me. You know, so I get it. It's not in the neighborhood that Jerry wants it. It doesn't, you know, he's not able to, I don't know what he wants to do in terms of building around South Loop Stadium and how he thinks that's going to get him what he wants. I don't know. Maybe he even had the opportunity at 35th and Shields. Maybe he was given the opportunity, said no to it because he wasn't able to. Because he wasn't able to get the extra funding, perhaps. Maybe he would have had to put his own money into gobbling up some of those parking lots and open space and revitalizing it. He just didn't want to.
Yeah. We don't really know 100%, but history tells us that might be true because he doesn't want to open the wallet, you know. And thank you to our wonderful and ever so dutiful producer Ian Eskridge for pointing out earlier in the chat, you know, he did that Crane's interview earlier this week, and he said that if they were to have a long-term lease, his kids are going to keep the team, because, you know, all the reports leading up to now have been saying that, you know, he informed his children that if they want to sell the team when he's gone, they can. But now he's saying, you know, something completely opposite. If I get this long-term lease, which is going to help me be more successful and be able to put more of a winning product on the field, then my kids might keep it. Do we pray that they don't get the lease or a stadium? Because, you know, if his kids run this thing the same way he did, we might be in for, well, it's going to be a lifetime of Reinsdorf run ball clubs.
There's no guarantee that they're going to run it like him, though. I mean, we saw what happened with the Blackhawks, you know, but there is a chance that it could be run just like him. I'm against the public money for a new stadium. I think the way he goes about things is absolutely ass backwards. It is not, obviously, there's a lot of factors into why things are the way they are right now, but Jerry has to bear a lot of that, more than a lion's share. I think on the post game, or maybe it was the pregame on NBC Sports Chicago, Ozzie and Chuck were answering fan tweets, you know, like bring me your questions, you know, the great Ozzie and Chuck. And I might butcher his last name, but he's a really good Sox fan. Adam, I think Kunos, got his question on the pregame, and it was essentially, what happened since 2021? How did this team go from that, okay, to where we are right now? And both Chuck and Ozzie went first, and Chuck kind of like backed him up on it. The number one thing they wanted to talk about were injuries. Injuries. That's the reason. Oh, it's injuries. All these injuries. That's not the number one reason. No, that's a reason.
I mean, you can't deny it. But then again, what is anybody doing to change anything about, you know, preventing some of these injuries? Because that doesn't seem to be happening either. Again, we're not in the clubhouse. We don't know what's going on behind closed doors. We only know what's been leaked to us and what's been whispered and what's actually been put out in media. But it sure doesn't seem like they're trying to do much to change anything. It's the same 4, 5, 6 characters every year with the same types of injuries over and over and over again. What kind of changes are being made? Again, it goes back to, like you said, where's that accountability?
Now, Chuck did say depth, which I agree. That was another reason for him. I would say, you know, for several years, you know, we just didn't invest in the depth. How the money was being spent was spent incorrectly. You know, some of the crazy contracts that were being given, especially to relief pitching, the money that Hahn did have to spend and allocate, it wasn't allocated correctly. You know, we did not have major league ready depth because of all these injuries. You think you'd learn a little
almost
bit. You
better prepare. $50 million on a bullpen.
Like, you come know, on now. And then, of course, when it came to really invest in premium talent at the top of the free agency, you didn't go that route. You know, you really tried to go cheap, which is no surprise. And
I don't know how much I blame Hahn for that either. I think maybe that was that's a Jerry Reinsdorf edict as well too. Listen, this is the budget you have to work with, but you can't dole out any long term
There's only some things that Hahn can do.
Even if it fits into that budget, you can't do it because I'm not going to pay for a guy who doesn't produce. I'm not going to pay a guy over $100 million for the first time in club history if he doesn't produce. Well, guess what? Now we got Ben Nintendo out there doing what he does for the highest, you know, grossing contract in White Sox history. I don't like the fact that the owner has these type of edicts. You be the owner. Let me do my job. But anyways, I digress. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm on one today, man. I'm fired up. I'm angry. Yeah.
This is the downside with doing an episode.
I hate being a White Sox fan right now. More than I ever have.
This is the downside of doing one right after one of these games. Here we are. We're going to be thinking about, you know, this streak we're on. Every win just about has been on a Tuesday. as
on our way, man. Yeah. We were on our way.
Yeah.
And Pedro mismanages the bullpen.
And Benintendi jogging around and some other stuff. A lot of things happened that collapsed.
This is a bad Twins team.
They're not good.
Very beatable team for the White Sox.
They're not good. But, you know,
The White Sox are. This is a very beatable team.
When things are going the way they're going for the White Sox, as I had mentioned, when the game was tied, I believe, it feels like in these situations, it's going to go the other way for the Sox, because just almost like a premonition, you're almost like creating your own destiny. And maybe there is a mentality of like that in the clubhouse of, I don't know if it was Lopez. Somebody had a quote. Someone had a quote a couple days ago of, you know, you try to get out of it, but sometimes you just don't get out of it. Yeah. Danny, feel free, man. Light it up. It's Hot Takes and Heaters. And there's been a lot of heaters. There's been a lot of heaters tonight. Cigarettes.
This is lung dart number two. I put the cigar down because
you might need a pipe, perhaps. I would like to see.
I mean, get me a little Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Grabow pipe. You know,
I think starting the next episode next week, just with a pipe would be nice. And then just
what's in that? What kind of pipe are we talking about? What's in that pipe?
Oh, just flavored tobacco, whatever you choose. Right. But depending on the topic, depending on how much it aggravates you and how stressful it is, that's the tobacco you choose, or that's what if it's a cigar or a cigarette or a pipe or
Yeah, I was just glad
car exhaust.
I go to the dispo because we'd never make it to the show.
Yeah,
it's not my thing anymore. It was at one point, but man,
yeah,
oof, I'd be hacking up a lung and sleeping about halfway through the show. So we'll figure this thing out.
I really want to get your thoughts on
cherry Cavendish. My dad used to smoke cherry Cavendish.
On this, I want to know about Nastrini in your mind, because this really struck a lot of people. How can they be sending Nastrini down? Why are you sending him down? This is so White Sox. What is the mentality here? Why are we not having him develop in Chicago? What's your take on it?
I kind of threw it out there a little bit earlier in the show, and I'm just going to kind of reiterate what I said. These types of moves are just, it's a White Sox thing. You bring them up, and at the very first sign of struggle, they're going to send them down. Now, who knows? Maybe something's going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. There might be some soreness. Maybe Ethan Katz saw something that they felt like he would be better served working on in the minor leagues. I don't really know, but it's a typical White Sox thing. You see, young guys come up, and I kind of had a feeling about it this year, is when you see these guys come up and you see them sign guys like Clevinger, in the 11th hour or even after the season starts, and you got Brad Keller doing the same thing, which, blank name, I think it was pointed out in the chat much earlier. He does suck. But, he's one of those guys. He's got that blue tie. He's wore those blue colors in the past, so they like him. There's going to be those guys like Davis Martin, who, has shown some really solid promise in the past, but unfortunately is dealing with injury. But those guys are going to get their opportunities. That's just the way this White Sox organization works. They think these veterans are going to come in. They're going to instill that culture that we've been talking about for the last year and a half. And unfortunately, guys like Nick Nastrini, I believe Jonathan Cannon is probably going to see an up and down kind of year, maybe more than once or twice. Any of the young guys that come up are potentially going to be.
Was it red flags? Was it alarm bells going off? Was it anger when he got sent down? Or did you feel like it was more of the process and this is?
I think it's the White Sox process.
Gotcha.
It's not necessarily my process. I think I probably would have stuck with him for a little bit. I mean, he was really solid his first game up, right? And then he comes up and he has some struggles afterwards. But they're young. And again, it's a 2024 season that's not going to amount to anything except for maybe, historically bad. We're already seeing them set records and be on pace for – like not just historically bad, like, but the worst in a lot of categories by far if they stay on this base, which again, I find hard to believe, but I just
You're making a go at it.
Give them an opportunity. Don't say, oh, first sign of struggle. See you later. Bye-bye.
It was against a Phillies lineup that was really, that was a tough lineup. I watched that game in real time and, you know, he was missing the zone.
He was.
And he was pressing a little bit and, you know, and I think he was trying to be a little too cute because it was a fearful lineup. You know, they got some mashers there. I mean, he's young, you know? So that's going to happen. I didn't think he was broke or, well, there goes the great Nastrini. Boy, so glad, you know, we got that guy. Not at all. It's just that's going to happen. He needs to go through that kind of stuff. You know, like Cannon did, was it yesterday? You know, he wore it, man. Would they Twins tag 7 on him or something? I mean, his stuff just wasn't working the way it was against the Royals.
You know, and again, it's early in the season. Temperatures, I hate to be that guy, but it does play a role. Where temperatures are, even for this time of year, typically a little cooler than normal up in Minnesota and here in Chicago, at least today and tomorrow. But, you know, you kind of hope that as guys get some experience, more than a game or two, I'm saying, you know, under their belt, that they settle in.
Yeah.
Get an opportunity to feel the way the game plays at the major league level because it's different from level to level.
Well, you know? I think it's also important to have a rebound opportunity, you know, right. like how can I take, you know, from that last start that had a bad taste in my mouth, you got to learn how to rebound, you know, it's because you're going to have that. There's very few times when you go out there, Stone has talked about it. You probably experienced it pitching. I know I experienced it no matter what level you're in. You definitely feel it in high school and college and beyond of, man, I have some of my stuff. I don't have great stuff today. You feel it in your bullpen session, you know, before you take the field. You're like, okay, I'm going to have to kind of live off of some of the things that I didn't expect. And maybe my fastball, I can't, you know, the arm slot, the grip, something just doesn't feel right. And sometimes you have great outings with that. I don't know if it's you're more focused or whatever, but sometimes you get hit around, but you got to get right back out there. You know, if you could, if your arm allowed it and the organization allowed it, you'd want to go out there the next day, right? Just to get that stink out of your just realm of what just happened. You know, you want to go avenge. And I gotta think that Nastrini is probably going to try to understand the process, be patient. He knows this is part of the business, but you know, he wants to get back out there and prove himself. I think you muted yourself, Danny.
I did.
Sorry. Let me get you. Now you're muted again. Now you're good.
I think you were controlling it. I was controlling. Sorry. We were both hitting it at the same time. But yeah, no, I was just kind of piggybacking off what you're saying is that any guy who's a true competitor is going to want that opportunity to hop back on the horse and prove that was just a fluke. If you go and you hang your head and you don't want that next opportunity, probably not the guy that I want on my roster anyway. And I don't believe that that's Nick Nastrini at all.
Yeah.
I don't believe that that's Jonathan Cannon at all.
Yeah. No, I'm excited to see more of Cannon and Nastrini and, you know, any other arms that come up. This is the time to do it if they're ready. But yeah, like let it play out. I feel like I get it, you know. It's part of the way the White Sox do it with sending Nastrini down, and you know, maybe they needed a bullpen arm or they wanted to make a different roster move, but I would just like for him to be a part of it for a while and just see what happens.
Well, and you know, as the season goes on more and more, it feels like we're leaning towards a 6-man rotation. I just feel like it is. And, because they're constantly talking about wanting to give Crochet, you know, an extra day off here.
Sure.
They're constantly talking about giving guys like, you know, Fetty and Soroka a day off. Like, you know, fine. So go with the six-man rotation. But this up-and-down frequent flyer mile stuff, I'm just not a fan of. But, again, not surprised at all because it's just what the White Sox do. Their front office, you know, makes decisions. I'm sure there's a group where they sit down and they all talk about what they want to do. This isn't just Chris Getz doing it on his own. And I guarantee you that not that entire group, you know, agrees with every move either. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But, you know, at the end of the day, it's what the White Sox have always done. And it's unfortunate, and I don't agree with it, but I'm not shocked whatsoever.
Well, what the White Sox did today, they got walked off by the Twins. They are 3-20. They've got two more with the Twins, and then they go home to take on the Tampa Bay Rays. You will be there this weekend, as I know a lot of people probably will, for the hockey jersey and any other stuff that they're giving out. Weather's supposed to be pretty nice Saturday and Sunday, maybe some rain, but mid to high 70s I'm seeing.
Looking forward to that, actually. Yeah. Should be really, really good weekend out of the ballpark.
Danny, we've managed to talk for over an hour now on the Chicago White Sox team.
Yeah, granted,
we had a game going on that we were kind of able to pick apart. But as always, thank you so very much, folks, jumping in the chats, the comments. We tried to get as many as we could, posted them, you know, brought them into our conversations. Yeah, it's always meaningful. Pass this podcast along. It's available absolutely everywhere you find your podcasts, futuresox.net. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Final thoughts, my man, Danny?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, just going back to your little, your sign-off notes there. First off, I am not one who is against a shameful or a shameless plug. I need all you guys that are in the chat right now to go ahead and smash that like button. It doesn't cost you a dime to do that. We are we're grinding it out here with a bad White Sox team, game in and game out, week in and week out. We've got a lot of people putting some great written content out there. We've got at least three podcasts and live streams going on every week, and we're all basically doing it for nothing. We're doing it just so that we can get some content out here to you guys. So at the very least, smash that like button. It don't cost you a dime. You know, if you do want to throw $2 a month at us on our Patreon, please go ahead and do that. You know, it does. There are some expenses to running a website of this nature. So we'd appreciate it that if you guys could help us out in the least of, you know, easiest of ways. We got a lot of regulars that come in here week in and week out. So obviously you guys like us for something. Spread the word. Have your buddies come in. We need the hours watched on YouTube here to, you know, get those super chats going so that maybe if you guys feel like you want to, you know, help us out, you can do that too. Well, those will be coming up in the future once we get the hours watched. But I do want to say I appreciate all you guys for checking in. There was
for a 3-20 team, man. I mean, yeah. You know, it's just the love that people have. It's ingrained, you know, White Sox baseball, they're not quitting. Dog. And it's misery loves company. I've said it many times in different venues and avenues. It's just kind of Sox therapy. It's like, you just want to rub shoulders with like-minded people. And we're all just shaking our heads and, you know, we're not going to give up. We're not going to just completely abandon. So we're trying to work our way through it somehow. So continue to pass it along, subscribe, like all that good stuff. Danny Miller at Danny Miller FS, Nick Morawski at Nick_ GGTB. I think we should do it all over again next week, Danny.
Yeah, you know, as much as I have had a chance to rant tonight, I am looking forward to next week. I'm always looking forward to sitting down with you and with everybody in our chat. You guys are awesome.
I'm excited to hear about your game time experience and how that goes on Saturday for you.
Yeah, you know, we'll see how the old knee holds up. You know, you may find me sitting in instead of doing the old crawl around the stadium, you might find me sitting in one of the lower deck sections while everybody else that I'm going with does the crawl thing. But either
that's
way,
that's all right. You're there.
I'm in it to win it, man. Yeah.
You're in the building. All right. So, sounds good, man. Heal up. Take it easy. Try to bring home a White Sox winner.
I got one more thing. I'm going to throw – it was asked that if we had any new Pedro Grifol quotes this week. I'm going to throw it out there. We're not even going to discuss it because we're going to go ahead and sign off here. But I'm going to let you guys go ahead and discuss. You guys chat about it on social medias or hit us in the comments after this this video goes up later on. But here's your Pedro quote for the week. He says, "Yesterday, I really care about our fans. I truly care about our fans, but I'm not going to throw out there anything that I speak to our players as individuals or as a team. I'm just not going to do it." So you can take what you want from that, how much he cares about his fans or not. And you guys discuss amongst yourselves. We'll see you next week, man.
That'll be a good starting point. For Danny Miller, I am Nick Borowski. Hey, until next time, go Sox.